we should get started, and we're doing the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to continue from last week. Last week, we started on the history of the Mishkan, which we discussed that originally when the Jews came to Israel, the Mishkan was in a place called Gilgal for 14 years, and then it went to a place called Shiloh, where it was there for 369 years. And right now, I would like to deal with the story of the Mishkan in Shiloh. Now, the actual building of the Mishkan in Shiloh is found in a pasuk. So again, just to mention that Shiloh was 369 years compared to the first Beis HaMikdash being 410 and the second Beis HaMikdash being 420. The gathering in Shiloh is mentioned in the book of Yehoshua, the book of Joshua, that it says there, Vayikalu kol hadas b'nei Yisrael Shiloh, all the Jewish people gathered to Shiloh, Vayashkinu shom es Ohel Moed, and they rested there, they parked there, the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, which they had in the desert, Ve'oretz nichbishon lifneihem, and the land of Israel was captured before them, which Rashi explains, that as soon as they put up the Mishkan in Shiloh, it was much easier to capture Israel. Now, concerning this Mishkan in Shiloh, there is a Mishnah in Masechta Megillah, which discusses what is the halachic differences between the Mishkan in Shiloh and the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And the Mishnah in Megillah brings, the only difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim is that in Shiloh, you're allowed to eat kodshim kalim. Now, there are karbonis that only a kohen can eat in the Beis HaMikdash itself. And kodshim kalim, which is less severe karbonis, generally are eaten throughout the city of Yerushalayim or throughout the city of Shiloh. However, there's one interesting halachic difference that kodshim kalim, as well as Meiser Sheni, which is generally the first Meiser is given to the Levi, and Meiser Sheni, the farmer, eats in Yerushalayim, which generally is an opportunity to encourage that members of your family should live in Yerushalayim because you have to spend 10% of your income in Yerushalayim or in Shiloh earlier. So in Yerushalayim, it has to be in the wall. In Shiloh, they were allowed to eat kodshim kalim and maiser sheni b'chol horoye, wherever you were able to see the city of the base, the Mishkan in Shiloh, as opposed to Yerushalayim, lifnim min hachoyimo, inside the walls of Yerushalayim. So quite an interesting thing. Why is there a unique halacha that during the 369 years that the Mishkan was in Shiloh, as long as you were able to see the Mishkan, you were allowed to eat kodshim kalim and maaser sheni, which is various karbonis and various holy things. Then the Mishnah goes on that kodshi kadoshim have to be eaten in the Mishkan or in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Then the Mishnah goes on to say that kedushas Shiloh, yesh achareho heter, the sanctity of Shiloh. We said that the Mishkan was in Shiloh for 369 years. During the time that the Mishkan was in Shiloh, during those 369 years, it was prohibited to make a carbon anywhere outside of Shiloh. However, after Shiloh was destroyed, and as we mentioned last week, and we have over here as we move up a bit, you will see that the Mishkan was after Shiloh. It was in Neiv for 13 years and in Givin for 44 years. So there are 57 years between the destruction of Shiloh and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And during those 57 years, it was permissible for a Jew to make a private carbon in his backyard, as opposed to during the 369 years of that the Mishkan and Shiloh stood, or when the Beis HaMikdash stood, it was prohibited to make a carbon anywhere else. So kedushas shiloi yesh achareho heter. After shiloi, there's permission, which means when shiloi is destroyed, it becomes permissible to bring carbonis anywhere in your own backyard, whether it's in Israel, whether in Australia, or wherever it is. Kedushas Yerushalayim ein achareho heter. The sanctity of Yerushalayim, no heter after it, which the meaning of this is that once they built the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, it was prohibited to bring a carbon anywhere else. We're continuing now as we're doing the history of the Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash, and we're dealing with the history of the 369 years that the center of Yiddishkeit, the center of everything, was in the city of Shiloh, which is in the north of Israel in the tribe of Yosef. And there's another Mishnah in Zvachim that says, Bo'u l'Shiloh, when they came to Shiloh, when they built the Mishkan in Shiloh, Nesru ha-bomos. A boma, which is a private mizbeach in your own backyard, became prohibited. Now, what type of structure was Shiloh? We know the Mishkan was more of a tent. The Beis HaMikdash was a proper structure. What type of place was Shiloh? So it says in the Mishnah in Zvachim, Lehoya Sham Tikra, there was no ceiling. It didn't have a ceiling. It had curtains on top. And the bottom, the walls were solid rock. And Labayis Shelavonim Milmaton, underneath the Shiloh was solid rock. The Yerios Milmaila, but there were curtains on top. Vehi Hoysa Minucha. Shiloh was called Minucha, a resting place, because it was only a temporary thing. Let's say today, the city of Shiloh today, even though the Mishkan was there for 369 years, is not considered a holy city. Just as Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, where the Torah was given, is not considered a holy mountain, as opposed to Yerushalayim, has a permanent sanctity. So Shiloh, we say, Vehi Hoysa Minucha, Shiloh was Minucha, and Kodshe Kodashim could be eaten anywhere in the walls of the Mishkan, and Kodshim Kalim and Maaser Sheni, which are sacrifices of a lower level of sanctity, and the second tithe, we said before, that Maaser Rishon is given to the Levi, and the Maaser Sheni, every Jew had to use 10% of his income in Yerushalayim or earlier in Shiloh, and this would encourage people to have members of their family studying in Yerushalayim. We generally say, Ki Mitzion Teitze Seira, the center of Torah was from Yerushalayim. Now, so we said, what type of a structure was this Mishkan in Shiloh? We discussed that the Mishnah says the bottom was rocks and the top was curtains. And Rabbi Vadya Mibar Tanura, the famous commentary on the Mishnah, says that there were rocks on the bottom, a solid wall. It says, Vativiehu Beis Hashem Shiloh. She brought him to the house of Hashem. You say it's a house, it's a proper structure. But at the same time, there's a pasuk in Tehillim, Vayitaish Mishkan Shiloh, that Hashem had forsaken and allowed the destruction of the Mishkan in Shiloh. So there's one pasuk that refers to the setup of Shiloh as a bayis, a house. There's another pasuk that refers to it as a Mishkan. Therefore, we say that the bottom of it was solid, and the top was curtains. Now, we mentioned a major halachic difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, that in Shiloh it was permissible to eat karbanos wherever you were able to see Shiloh. There is a pasuk which the Gemara in Zvachim quotes, V'loy tan ashiloy, Rashi actually questions that this pasuk is not quoted correctly fully, but in any case, the pasuk is saying, however it's supposed to read, that there was yearning, there was lamentation over Shiloh. Mokim shekol haroya oisei, anybody who would see the city of Shiloh and think back to the Mishkan was once there, misanech olav, he would sigh over it. And this is even when there was a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, people would sigh over the destruction of Shilay. Why? Because there's a tremendous difference between the in Shilay, the sanctity of eating kodshim, of eating karbonis, was any place where you could see the Mishkan and Shilay. So if you're on top of a mountain, even hundreds of kilometers away, if you could see the Mishkan and Shilay, you can eat kodshim there. As opposed to in Yerushalayim, you can only eat kodshim in the walls of Yerushalayim. So Rashi tells us that hoyu misanchem, people would sigh when they would think back of the amazing holiness of Shilay, that wherever you were able to see it, you were able to eat karbonis. Now, why is it, what is the logic of this halacha, that in Shilay it was permissible to eat karbonis wherever you were able to see it, and Yerushalayim only in the walls? Rabbi Avuhu says, Omar Kra, there's a pasuk when Yaakov blesses his children. He says, Bein Poiras Yosef, Bein Poiras Alei Oyin. Actually, first I'll tell you what Rashi and Chumash says, and then we'll see how this Gemara explains it. Rashi and Chumash says that Bein Poiras is either that Yosef is a charming son, and people would want to use their eyes to look at Yosef, or Rashi says that Yosef is a Poiras, a fruitful son, from the word Piri of Erivya. Yosef had the biggest population of all the Shvatim, and an ayin hara, an evil eye, jealous eye, would not affect Yosef. Or Rashi brings Bein Poiras Yosef. Yosef blocked the view of Esau from seeing his mother. He stood in front of his mother, and because of this, Yosef merited that an ayin hara does not affect the children of Yosef. Now, here the Gemara gives a different meaning. What does it mean, ben poiras Yosef, concerning Shilay? Lashon piri averivya, being fruitful and multiply. Now, normally, piri averivya is that you have a big family. But by Yosef, the piri averivya, makom achilas kodshim nisrab eloi al yedei ha'ayin. Yosef, in his Mishkan, the Mishkan in Shilay was in the tribe, in the domain of the tribe of Yosef. And over there, the area they were able to eat kodshim was increased as long as you were able to see Shilay. Now, why does Yosef have special merit connected to the eye? So the Gemara in Zvachim continues, Ayin Shilay Ratzasa, Yosef's eye did not want to benefit from something that is not his. He refused to. Potiphar's wife was Zalecha, was trying to get Yosef's attention, and Yosef refused to look at her. He refused to take any interest. So Yosef had a very holy eye. And because Yosef's eye was so holy, that's why Yosef merited that any Jew living anywhere in Israel who was able to see the Mishkan and Shilay and Yosef's portion was allowed to eat karbonis wherever he was. Reb Yosi b'Reb Chanina brings, there's a pasuk in Moshe Rabbeinu's blessing to Yosef, Uritzoin Shoichni Sne. Now the word Sne is usually translated as thorns, but here Reb Yosi b'Reb Chanina translates it as an enemy. And he says, Ritzoin is a desire, a strong desire. Ayin shelei ratzason lehones midavar she'ene shelei. Yosef had a tremendous willpower. Yosef says, I am going to control my eyes. I refuse to allow my eyes to wander on something that's not mine. Because of this, because Yosef was so firm in the control of his eyes, he merited v'tiske v'toichal bein asnuim, that even in the areas of those brothers who hated Yosef, because originally in the early days, there had been friction between Yosef and the other brothers, and the other brothers hated Yosef. They even sold him, tried to kill him, some of them, or wanted to kill him. Nevertheless, Yosef's eye is so powerful, and Yosef's desire is so powerful Yosef made a firm resolution that he will not allow his eye to wander. And because of this, even a Jew who his ancestors hated Yosef, his ancestors come from another Shevet that hates Yosef, but if he could see the Mishkan and the portion of Yosef, he can eat karbonis. Rashi says, Verotzen, al yedei uritzayin sheich nisneh. So Rashi translates that it's three words here. Ritzayin, there's a willpower, there's a strong desire. Al yedei rotzayin shelei rotza lizayin mima she'ine shelei. Yosef does not want to be sustained from something that's not his. And because of this, he merits sheichni. He brings the Shechina. He brings holiness. Sneh, even those who hate him, even a Jew who hates Yosef. But if you could see Yosef's building, you can eat kodshim. Just by looking at something that belongs to Yosef, it brings sanctity to any Jew. And kodshav necholim, his kodshim are eaten, af begvulei shar shvatim, even in the boundaries of the other shvatim, shes son uhu, that hated him. Now, in the time of Shiloh, the most famous of the, there were millions of Jews who visited Shiloh, but the one who's most famous is Elkanah, the father of Shmuel HaNavi, who we mentioned last week. And actually Elkanah, why did he merit to have a son, Shmuel HaNavi, who became the greatest of all the prophets? Moshe v'Aaron b'chayinah, who Shmuel b'kodesh Shmai, was all in the merit of Elkanah motivating people to get excited about visiting Shiloh, which we discussed this last week, that the Tana Devei Eliyahu Rabbah brings, which just to mention about this Sefer, Tana Devei Eliyahu, it's a Sefer written by Rav Onan, who had a regular shir with Eliyahu Hanavi, and then one time Rav Onan took something which was legally his, but it was touching on a bribe, and Eliyahu Hanavi stopped coming to Rav Onan, and Rav Onan had to hide in a box. We actually have every day in our davening. So Tana Devei Eliyahu is shiurim that Eliyahu Hanavi gave to Rav Onan. Every single day in davening after Ein Kelikenu, we have a quote from Tana Devei Eliyahu, but here we're quoting from Tana Devei Eliyahu about Elkanah, why he merited to have an amazing son, Shmuel Hanavi, because of his dedication to the Mishkan and Shiloh. Elkanah would go up to Shiloh four times a year. Three were a Torah requirement, and one that he took on as a donation, as a vow, as a personal vow. As it says, V'olah ha'ish ahu mi'yomim yomima, mi'irim yomim yomima, he left his city every year, l'shtachav is to bow, v'lizbayach l'Hashem tzvaka is b'shiloh, to slaughter karbonis for Hashem in Shiloh. So the Tana Devei Eliyahu brings, Elkanah went up to Shiloh with his wife and his children and his family, his brothers, his sisters, and all his relatives would go with. Elkanah tried to encourage every family member and anybody on whom he had influence to join him in his pilgrimage to Shiloh. And he said, learn from these Canaanim or idolaters, that even though their idolatry is foolishness, you see how they're involved in it. So you should learn to be connected to Hashem, who's alive, Kel Chai V'Kayim, who Hashem blessed be he, who's alive forever and ever, Lo'ila B'lol Me'omaya. And he said, all of you guys, please come with me to Shiloh. And as they would go on the way to Shiloh, they would lodge in the main street of the city, so to make as much noise and as much publicity as possible, and they would sleep there, men separate and women separate, so that the men in each city that they would stop on the way, the men would speak to the local men, the women to the local women, and the adults with the children, and they would try to convince, please join our pilgrimage to Shiloh. And the whole country would get excited, and they would ask, where are you going? And Elkanah's family would say, we're going to the house of Hashem in Shiloh. From there comes Torah and good deeds. Why don't you join us? We'll go together. Immediately, these other people would start crying, and they said, we're going with you. And the second year, Elkanah had five families other than his own family. The third year, he had 10 families. By the next year, he had 60 families joining his pilgrimage to Shiloh. And every single year, Elkanah would go on a different route to try to get different Jews to join him. And Elkanah got all the Jewish people, the Kafschus, to merit. He educated all Jewish people to do mitzvahs. Many people merited because of Elkanah. And Hashem, who sees people's hearts, says to Elkanah, you motivated the whole Jewish people to merit and educated all the Jewish people to do mitzvahs. So many people merited because of you. In this merit, you will have a son who will bring all the Jewish people to merit, who will educate all the Jewish people to mitzvahs. Many people will merit through him. And this is all in the merit of the actions that Elkanah did. Now, the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim when the sons of Eli HaKoyin took the Arim to the battle. There was a battle with the Plishtim, and Eli HaKoyin's sons had not treated the Mishkan properly. There had been prophecies both from Elkanah and Shmuel about the downfall of the house of Eli and specifically of his sons. But anyway, when they had a battle with the Plishtim, they took the Arim to battle, and the Arim was destroyed and was captured in that battle. And during that time, the Plishtim destroyed the Mishkan and Shiloh. During the 57 years, when the Mishkan was 13 years in Noiv and 44 in Giving, between Shiloh and the Beis HaMikdash, it was permissible to have a private Mizbeach. As we have the Mishnah in Zvachim, Bo'um and Noiv and Giving, they came to Noiv after Shiloh. The Mishkan was in Noiv for 13 years, then Giving for 44 years. Hutru Habomis. During that time, it was permissible to have a private Mizbeach. Kodshe Kodshim Netholim Lefnim Min HaKloim. Kodshe Kodshim had to be eaten in the curtains of the Beis HaMikdash in the Mishkan. Kodshim Kalim B'chol Orei Yisrael. Any Jewish city, any major Jewish city, you were able to eat Kodshim Kalim during those 57 years. Now, we've now finished the section of the history of the Mishkan. Before we get to the actual Beis HaMikdash, I want to first go through the history of the Arim. The Arim, which is in the Kodesh Kadoshim, where the Luchos were held. The Arim is built by Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. He's a great-grandson of Miriam, a great-grandson of Kalev ben Yefuneh. He is the one who's chosen to be in charge of building the Mishkan. How does Bezalel build the Arim? It says, "Mi bayis u'michut titzapenu." You should coat it from inside and from outside. So it says, there were three Arinos that Bezalel made, two of gold and one of wood. And each one of them had a bottom and open on top. He put a wooden one in the gold and then gold in the wood, which means the outer one is gold, the inner is gold, and the middle one is wood. And he covered the top of it with gold, so it's now coated with gold from all sides. Now, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bezalel to make a Mishkan, he first tells Bezalel to make an Arim, a Shulchan, a Mizbeach, and then he tells him to make a Mishkan. Bezalel, however, builds the Mishkan first. Why did Bezalel change the order? So it's brought, that Shmuel bar Achmoni brings, that Bezalel, the word Bezalel, is Betzel Kel, in the shadow of Hashem. When Hashem told Moshe, tell Bezalel to make an Arim and Kelim, Moshe make the Arim and the vessels, and then the Moshe went out of order, and he said, make an Arim and Kelim and a Mishkan, but Hashem said first the Mishkan. So Bezalel says, Moshe Rabbeinu, the custom is before you build a house and then you deal with the furniture. You don't build a furniture when you don't have a house to put it. And you're telling me to make an Arim and Kelim and then the Mishkan? These Kelim, these vessels, I'm going to make the Arim, the Shulchan, the Mizbeach, the Menorah, where will I put them? Maybe Hashem said the Mishkan first, and Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bezalel, you're right. Maybe Bezalel Kel Hoyisa. Maybe you were in the shadow of Hashem, because Hashem spoke to me And you know, Beruach HaKodesh, the order that Hashem said it. Then we quote, Rav Yehuda Marav says, Bezalel was a big expert. He was actually only 13 years old when he built the Mishkan. Yet he was able to put together the letters with which heaven and earth were built. As it says, Vayimala Yoisei Ruach Elikim, Hashem filled Bezalel with the spirit of Hashem. Chochma Tfuna Das. And it says, Hashem bechochma yosad eretz. Hashem made the eretz with chochma, kainin shamayim bitvuna. Or it says, yeah. So you see that Bezalel had amazing wisdom. As it says that Hashem gave Bezalel chochma, and Hashem created the world with chochma. Rabbi Yochanan brings that Hashem gives chokhma to somebody who already has chokhma, which means Bezalel had his own wisdom, and because he worked so hard on developing his own wisdom, Hashem gave him more. As he quotes a pasuk, Yohev chokhma son lechakimin, Hashem gives wisdom to those who are already wise. People work on developing their own wisdom. Uminda, and he gives knowledge liyayde bina to those who already have their own understanding. Yeah, we mentioned that the order was changed, that Hashem tells, Moshe tells Bezalel first to make the Arayin and the Luch and the Shulchan and the Menorah, but Bezalel makes first the Mishkan, and he was right, that's what Hashem had said. Now, the Arayin, what is in the Arayin? There's a machloikas in Bava Basra, that Meir says, the Luchais, as well as the Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote. And Rabbi Yehuda says, the Luchais, as well as two silver pillars that are under the Luchais. Also, next to the Arayin, there was a special argos, a special box. The Plishtim had robbed the Arayin when Shiloh was destroyed. The Plishtim, Goliath, captured the Arayin, and they kept the Arayin for 7 months. And then eventually the Plishtim were forced to send the Arayin back, and they sent an argos, a box with valuables as a gift. And this argos was put next to the Arayin and the Sefer Torah. According to the Meir, the Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu is inside the Arayin. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu is on the argos, the box of the Plishtim, next to the Arayin. Now, who carried the Arayin when they were in the Midbar, in the desert, and they went from place to place? Who carried the Arayin? So usually the Levium carried the Arayin. There were two times that the Kayanim carried the Arayin, by the crossing of the Yarden and by the capturing of Yericho. As they surrounded Yericho for 7 days, and on the seventh day they captured Yericho, the Kayanim were carrying the Arayin. The Arayin helps split the Yarden, the Jordan River, because what happens by this crossing of the river, the Kayanim were told to put their feet into the Yarden, into the Jordan River. As soon as the Kayanim put their feet into the river split. The Arayin flew across the Yarden. One second, correction. All the Jewish people crossed the Yarden, and the Kayanim now are on one on the eastern bank of the Yarden, and all the Jews are on the west. The water goes back, and then the Arayin picked up the Kayanim, and the Kayanim carrying the Arayin flew across the Yarden. And that's why in the days of David HaMelech, when David was bringing the Arayin to Yerushalayim, and he was bringing it in a wagon, and the Arayin at that point, suddenly it seemed went off the wagon, which the reason the Arayin went off the wagon is it's against halacha to carry the Arayin on a wagon. And Uzzah, who was the son of Avinadav, who was looking after the Arayin, tried to catch the Arayin as he thought it was slipping. And over there, Uzzah was punished and died on the spot. It's actually mentioned, why was Uzzah punished? The Arayin was actually not falling down. It was just going straight forward, at the same level as it was not to be on the wagon. It wasn't falling. There was no gravity pushing it down. Uzzah, however, saw the Urim going out of the wagon, and he thought the Urim would fall, and therefore he went to grab it. Uzzah should have made a Kal v'chomer that if by the crossing of the Yarden, the Urim was able to carry the Kohanim across the Yarden, across the Jordan River, certainly it could carry itself. The Urim helps with the capture of Yericho because they surrounded the Kohanim, went around Yericho one time. They started from the 22nd of Nisan. So 6 days they went around one time, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th of Nisan. And then on the 28th of Nisan, they surrounded Yericho seven times. And as they finished going around the seventh time, which was on a Shabbos, the walls of Yericho came down. So it was the Urim carried by the Kohanim that helped capture the city of Yericho. Now we mentioned that the B'nai Eli took the Urim to war. Now, about the Urim going to war, which Urim was it? Was there only one Urim, or was there more than one Urim? Which is an interesting question. Rashi in Parshas Ekev says, there were two Arayinis. There were two Arayins. And Rashi says, why does Rashi say there were two Arayinis? Because when the Luchais, when Moshe brought the Luchais down, they had not yet built the Mishkan. So where were the Luchais going to go? So Moshe Rabbeinu made an Arayin for the Luchais before he went up to get the second Luchais. So there was an Urim made by Moshe Rabbeinu before the building of the Mishkan, which when they brought the Luchais down, the Luchais went in the Urim. And then after Yom Kippur, they started building the Mishkan. And that's when Bezalel built his Urim. So Rashi in Parshas Ekev says, Bo'esai, at that time, Hashem tells Moshe to make an Urim. And again, according to Rashi, there are two Arayinis. There's the one that Moshe Rabbeinu made in Parshas Ekev, and the one that Bezalel made when they built the Mishkan. And Rashi says, Bo'esahi, L'soifar Boim Yoim, after 40 days that Moshe davened. Just to put in perspective, the Torah was given on Shavuos, the 6th of Sivan. Then Moshe was up on the mountain for 40 days. He came down on the 17th of Tammuz. And that's when the Jewish people had made the Egel. That's when Moshe broke the Luchais. On the 18th of Tammuz, he went back up to Davin for 40 days. And at that time, Hashem was unhappy till the 29th of the month of Av. And then on the Shchodesh Elul, Hashem tells Moshe to carve out a new set of Luchais, and he should come back up the mountain for the second Luchais. So Rashi says, Bo'esahi l'soifar bo'im yoyim, at the end of the 40 days, the middle 40 days, Nisrat Zali, Hashem agreed, and he says, P'son l'cha, carve out Luchais, carve out an Urim. V'acharkach v'yosi son l'cha Urim. Actually, correction, Moshe was told that he should carve out the Luchais. The first Luchais were Hashem made. The second Luchais were made by Moshe. Moshe actually became rich by making these Luchais because they were made of a very precious metal. So Hashem tells Moshe to carve out the Luchais, and then he tells him, and make an Urim. And Moshe says, Vani, this is all Rashi in Parshas Ekev, Bani Osisi Urim Tchila, I made first an Urim, that when I come with the Luchais, I'll have where to put them. Rashi continues, this is not the same Urim that Bezalel made, because the Mishkan wasn't made till after Yom Kippur, because only when Moshe came down the mountain the third time, that Hashem, after Yom Kippur, Hashem tell them about making a Mishkan. And Bezalel made first a Mishkan and then an Urim. So Bezalel's Urim was not made till many months later. So Rashi says, Nimsa ze oroin acher hoya. There are two separate oroin, says Rashi. There's the one that Moshe Rabbeinu made and the one that Bezalel made. The one that Bezalel made, that's the one that was in the Kodesh Kodoshim. Vizeh, and it was the oroin of Moshe, Shehaya Yotzei Mohem Lamelchama, which usually went out to war. V'oisoi she'asa Bezalel lo yotza Lamelchama. The oroin that Bezalel made did not go to war. Ella bimei eli, Bezalel's oroin was only taken to a war once in the days of Eli and his sons. V'nen shu'olav, that's when they got punished. V'nishban, it was captured by the Plishtim, by Goliath. Now, as mentioned, the oroin is captured by the Plishtim. Which Plishti captured the oroin? It's actually Goliath, the famous David and Goliath. The famous Goliath who fought David HaMelech, he is the one who captured the oroin. Shaul, who later became a king, tried very much to get the oroin back from Goliath. He couldn't. In the end, there was a bit of a tug of war between Shaul and Goliath, and Shaul grabs the luchos from Goliath haplishti. Goliath ends up with the oroin, and Shaul ends up with the luchos. There's a pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Dalet, pasuk Yud Beis, during the war of the Plishtim, Vayorotz ish binyamin me hamarotha, a man from Binyamin ran from the battlefront. Vayavay shiloi bayoim hahu, he came to Shiloi on that day. Umadov kruim, his garments were ripped. Vadoma aloisha, he has earth on his head. Who is this man who ran from the battlefront? Rashi brings ish binyamin ze hoyoshol. This man from Binyamin who ran from the battlefront was Shaul, who later became the king. Shechotaf es haluchos miyad Goliath. He grabbed the luchos away from Goliath, ubarach loy, and he escaped. And Shaul came to Shiloh to hand the luchos to Eli HaKoyen, which unfortunately Eli died then, so there was no one to hand it to. On this idea of Shaul had great merit. Shaul had Mesidas Nefesh to save the Luchos for the Jewish people. And there's actually an amazing capital to Hillim, a capital Zion. As people know, there was friction between Shaul and David. And for whatever reason, Shaul wanted to kill David. And David, his whole life, Shaul was chasing him. And then when David stopped going to battle and he said a special capital Tilim Yud Ches or Shmuel Beis Chof Gimel, which is Asher Diber L'Hashem Es Divri Ashir Azayis B'Yim Hitzel Hashem Ayisei Mikaf Kolevo Miyad Shol, he made a special capital Tilim, a special chapter of Tilim when Hashem saved him from all his enemies and particularly from the hand of Shol, because Shaul had been his biggest enemy. And David thanks Hashem, thank you for saving me from all my enemies, and specifically, thank you for saving me from Shaul. So this that David sings for saving from all the enemies was a good thing. But this that he sang to Hashem for saving from Shaul, and David sees Shaul as a negative person, and the truth is Shaul was trying to kill David. But in Tehillim Zion, Pasuk Aleph, it says, Shigoyoin leDavid. David says, I made a mistake. Asher shor laHashem, that I sang to Hashem on the words of Kush ben Yamini. Now, Kush ben Yamini refers to Shaul. Why is Shaul called Kush? Kush is an Ethiopian. Generally, Ethiopians are black. So it says that just like a Kushi, there would be no debate that the Cushi, the Ethiopian, is black. There would be no debate about Shaul being a tzaddik. And Cush ben Yamini is the tzaddik who is from Shevet Binyamin. And David sings to Hashem, thank you, Hashem, for having saved me. So the Medrash Tehillim says in Kapitel Zion that the at medame atzmecha l'Shaul, are you comparing yourself to Shaul? It's true, Shaul was chasing you. It's true Shaul was trying to kill you, but do you realize what a great tzaddik Shaul was in other areas? Shaul minishorim kamu me'aroyos goveiru. Shaul was quicker than an eagle, stronger than a lion. And according to the Medrash Tehillim, when was Shaul quicker than a lion and than an eagle and stronger than a lion? When he grabbed the luchos from Goliath. And he did a lot of running that day. Now, there's three opinions on how much mileage, and we will see. And that's why we say, Minishorim Kalu. He was quicker than an eagle in the amount of mileage that Shaul covered in one day. And there's three opinions as to how much mileage he covered and what the reason for it is. Reb Levi says, Shishim mil hayam halach Shaul b'yoymech. On that day that Shaul grabbed the luchos, he covered 60 mil. 60 mil is 60 kilometers in one day. A mil is 2,000 amos, approximately a kilometer. So Reb Levi says he did 60 kilometers in one day. Reb Simon, this is all in the Medrash Tehillim. Reb Simon says, May of Esrim, 120 mil, which is 120 kilometers. And the Rabbanan say, Mayo Shmeinim. And we're soon going to see in the commentaries why 60 kilometers, why 120, why 180. The Amosayan, when was this that Shaul ran 60 kilometers or 120 or 180 kilometers in one day? Kishanishba Arin, the day the Arin was captured. Continuing the Medrash Tehillim, Hadol Diksiv, this is the meaning of the pasuk that says, Vayorotz ish binyamin mehamarocha, the man from Binyamin ran from the battlefield. Zeh Shaul, this is Shaul. So Shaul had Mesidas Nefesh, and he ran 60 or 120 or 180 mil kilometers in one day to have Mesidas Nefesh to save the Luchais. Ve'at midama atzmecha l'Shaul, and you are comparing yourself to Shaul. Shaul ran 60 or 120 or 180 mil approximately kilometers in one day. Levi's opinion is he did 60 mil. From the battlefront, he grabs the luchos and ran to Shiloh, 60 mil. And Reb Simon says it was 120. He says Shaul was in Shiloh. He heard about the capture of the Arim. He ran to the battlefront, tackled Goliath, took the luchos from him, and ran back to Shiloh. So he covered 120 mil, which is kilometers in one day. The Ravnin say, the multiple rabbis say, 180. First, he went from the battlefront, he went to Shiloh. He was in the battlefront, and he sees it's not going well. He ran to Shiloh to give over news. Then he comes to Shiloh, he hears the Arim was captured. He runs right back to the battlefront to get the Arim. So he runs 60 kilometers from the battlefront to Shiloh. He hears the Arim was captured, he runs back to the battlefront. Then he runs back to Shiloh to bring the Arim to the Shluchis to Shiloh. A total of, according to Ravnin, the Rabbanon, 120 mil in one day. As we mentioned, Shaul grabbed the Luchis from Goliath. Shaul comes to Shiloh with ripped garments and Adoma Aleshe, earth on his head. He reports to Eli HaKoyin about the capture of the Arim. When Eli hears this news about the capture of the Arim, he falls backwards and dies on the spot. Eli HaKoyin was 98 years old when he heard about the capture of the Arim. He also heard about the death of his two sons. The wife of Pinchas ben Eli dies in childbirth at the same time, that same day that the Arim was captured, and calls her son Ikavid, who later becomes a Kohen Gadol. The Arain is in Eretz Plishtim, by the land of Plishtim, for 7 months. The Arain being by the Plishtim for 7 months, the Medrash Rabba says, is a punishment for the fact 7 months, because Avraham gave Avimelech 7 sheep in a treaty between Avraham and Avimelech, which is quite a fascinating story in the Medrash Rabba. The Medrash Rabba by Yeron and Dalet brings Vayikach Avraham tzoyin uvakar, vayitein la'avimelech. Avraham took sheep and cattle and gave Avimelech. Vayomer Avimelech al Avraham. Avimelech says to Avraham, Mo heina sheva kvosis. What is the seven you gave? You have seven sheep here. What's their significance? So he tells him, four pshatim the Medrash gives. He says, what the seven sheep are for a treaty. So Hashem says, Ato nosato, you gave sheva kvosis b'loy litzayni. Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, you made a treaty with Avimelech. And you gave him seven sheep, which I didn't want you to do. By your life, I am going to delay the simcha of the building of the Beis HaMikdash will be delayed for seven generations. Shiva Doiris, because of the seven sheep that Avraham gave to Avimelech. Now, Avraham means well. He wants to make a treaty with Avimelech. Avimelech is the strongest king there, and Avraham is a single Jew. Why have war? Yet Hashem says you gave him seven sheep in a treaty. For that, the Beis HaMikdash is delayed seven generations. Second thing the Medrash says, Ato nasata li shevak fosis melita tzayni. You gave him seven sheep against my will. Because of that, the Plishtim are going to end up killing seven tzaddikim. And they are Chofni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, Shimsha and Shaul and his three sons. So seven tzaddikim died by the hand of Plishtim because Avraham gave the Plishtim seven sheep when he made this treaty, which Hashem didn't want. Then the Medrash brings a third pshat. You gave him seven sheep against my will. His sons will destroy seven mizbeach, seven holy centers, which was the Ohel Moed in the Midbar, which was demolished, and then Gilgal, and then Noiv, and Givin, and Shili, and the two Beis HaMikdashes. So seven centers of serving Hashem were destroyed because of the seven sheep that Avraham gave to Avimelech. Again, it's not clear. Some of these seven weren't destroyed. They were just dismantled. But nevertheless, we had all these setbacks because of the seven sheep that Avraham gave in a treaty to Avimelech. Then he brings a fourth child. You gave him seven sheep against my will. The Orin will be at the Plishtim for 7 months. And that is the Pasuk says, Vayitein lashvi uzay, that Hashem put his strength in captivity, that's the Arein HaPris, as it says a pasuk in Shmuel, Vayhi Arein Hashem b'stei Plishtim Shiva Chodoshim. It was 7 months in the stei Plishtim. That's what the pasuk says. Vayitein Mashvi Uzay was the Arein HaPris, and Tifarta Yibiyad Zar was the Big Day Kohanah. The beauty were taken because the Plishtim also took over the Big Day Kohanah, the garments of the Kohen. The Efeitayah brings Shevak Fosis Belita Tzayni. Why is it so terrible? The Yafei Tayar is a Pirush on the Medrash. He says, Tana Devei Eliyahu also considers this a sin. And the Malachim seem to prosecute. Why did Avraham make this covenant with Avimelech? So the Yafei Tayar, who's a commentary on the Medrash, asks, what did Avraham Avinu do so bad here? There's a big, powerful king, and Avraham wants to be at peace with him. He doesn't want to have a war. Avimelech wants to be at peace with him. Yes, why do we have wars? We don't want to push him off. So having peace is not the problem. But why are you making an oath? And even if you're going to make an oath, why do you have to make a krisos bris, a covenant? And a bigger thing, the Efei Tayar says, he should have asked Hashem's permission. Now, the Efei Tayar goes on to say that even though staying in Mitzrayim, which is part of the generations, was not from the Plishtim, but still, it says that the Bnei Ephraim went out 30 years before they went out of Mitzrayim, and they fell in the hands of the Plishtim because they didn't guard the gates. And this was all because of the seven sheep that the Bnei Ephraim fell in the hands of the Plishtim, because they had to wait seven generations. And even though there had been a decree of 400 years of enslavement, they could have been counted from the birth of Yitzchak. But now they were counted from the, but otherwise they could have been counted from Bris Ben Absarim. The Bnei Ephraim made mistakes, so this is all because of the seven sheep, the destruction of the Bnei Ephraim, who left Mitzrayim early, and because of this, there was a decree of 40 years in the desert. So basically, the Efei Tayar says, again, that everything is over this treaty that Avram made with the seven sheep. Then the Yafei Torah goes on to say, even though the Yad Plishtim was Takifa, what did Avram do wrong? The Plishtim were the powerful nation of the time. Avram is one Jew. What could he do? Nevertheless, he should have, during the time that the Arin was by the Plishtim, they should have offered the Plishtim money. The fact that they allowed the Plishtim to keep the Arin for 7 months, they should have tried to give them money. Especially the Plishtim were suffering. The Yad Hashem, the Ashdoidim, they had a lot of problems. If the Jews would have begged the Arin back and made a deal, the Plishtim would have probably given it back. And it actually mentions that when the Arin finally did come back and the people of Beis Shemesh had a plague and many people and many Jews in Beis Shemesh died. And Hashem says, if one of your chickens would have gone lost, you would have put effort to bring it back. My Arin was in the Plishtim for 7 months. You didn't take interest. Now we have also that it says that as the cows, the Plishtim put the Arin on a wagon with cows, and Vayisharna Haporex, the cows went straight back. Mahalchos Biyashrus, they went directly back. The cows were facing the Arin, and that's what it says, Vayisharna. They said, Shiro Bepeh, the cows were singing. And we are going to have a whole lot of opinions as to exactly what are the words of the cows' songs. And I just want to read one piece. Tomorrow, next week, we'll try to get the... And Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman says, the Levim to sing the singing properly in the Mishkan was so hard. And let's look at the amazing thing. To get the Levim to sing needed 5 years of training. There's a group of cows and they were able to sing a whole lot of chapters of Tehillim with beautiful music. Yasher Chayochem, what a Yashakoyah, how amazing. The cows did better than any choir of Levim because these cows had the merit of bringing back the Arin. No, this is a good note to end on, that if the Eibishter could make that a cow can sing and sing beautifully in the Gunim, much better than the best choir. So the Eibishter can do anything and will have a Geula Shleima B'Karoiv Mamash. Anybody have any questions, comments?